Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Minds on Mental Health podcast. My name is Andy Dean. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and today I'm once again speaking with Dave Clauser. Dave is a Marine Corps veteran as well as a retired educator who currently works at Penn Medicine Princeton House Behavioral Health in the first responder program as a certified peer recovery specialist. Today, I was lucky enough to speak with Dave about his own personal recovery journey, so I hope you enjoy the episode and find it helpful. Dave, how comfortable are you talking about your own personal experience?
I'm very comfortable.
Okay. Okay, sir. Because I guess with that in mind, if you are open to it, I'm wondering if you would be open to talking about, with your history as a first responder, what helped you to buy into treatment? What helped you to, you know, admit that there was a problem that you needed to address, and what helped you realize that you weren't the only one, like you said? Yeah, would you be willing to talk about that?
Sure. Okay, so on July 25th, 1991, I reported to treatment, and they did an assessment, and one of the questions was, who is the president of the United States? Mm-hmm. And I looked at the woman and I said, do you think I'm crazy? And she responded, aren't you the guy with the three DWIs? Mm-hmm. And then I was offended and insulted, because in my mind, she was saying anyone with sense would not have had to get three DWIs. Mm, mm-hmm. And then later that day, I met my counselor, and she explained the rules to me, and then she asked if I had questions. And because I'm so impressed with myself, of course I had questions. Mm-hmm. And of course I created a scenario where I insulted her intelligence, and I expressed that perhaps there was another counselor who could treat someone of my caliber. Mm-hmm. And at some point she got fed up with my nonsense, and she asked me, what would I be doing at 6 o'clock that night? And I told her, how would I know? And she said, well, Dave, you need to know I'm going home at 6 o'clock. And her point was, someone as dumb as I thought she was, they were permitting to leave, but someone of my caliber, they were keeping under lock and key. And of mm-hmm. course, that infuriated me. And so that started the process, because that counselor was the first person who I ever heard said, Dave, you need to learn. I don't know. I need help. Mm-hmm. And now my roommate in treatment, he had been kicked out of the Marine Corps because of drinking Aqua Velva during boot camp. And Craig was 6 years younger than I was, but he had reached a point where he needed to get clean and sober, or he was going to kill himself with his use and abuse of drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And for probably my first 3 to 4 years, if Craig did not call me every day, he called me every other day. And Craig was my human connection to the recovery community. Mm-hmm. I could tell Craig what I liked, what I didn't like, who I didn't like, why I didn't like him. And at the end of every conversation, he would encourage me to not drink and go to meetings. And so at some of the meetings, there are speakers who have a sense of humor I can identify with. Mm-hmm. And that's when they would make me relax in laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And some of their cogent points would penetrate my skull.
Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about this, and I want you to correct me if I am, but it sounds like the most helpful thing for you at that time was exactly what you had pointed out before, which was becoming connected to other people who were doing or going through similar things. You know, you mentioned the people that you met at treatment that you still remember, these things that they said to you. And then you mentioned going to 12-step meetings and being able to connect with people there and their sense of humor, and how those connections kind of allowed you to bring your guard down, basically.
And so let me just reinforce that substance use disorder is an illness of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And recovery is all about connection. And mm-hmm. so the more I want to get well, the more I have to connect. In the beginning, I would attend the meeting and I would look around the room and I could discount all the women because I'm a man. And so I have nothing in common with the women.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would survey all the men. And most men, I considered myself either smarter than or physically I could whip their butt
mm-hmm.
in a physical confrontation. And so in a matter of nanoseconds, I was unlike anyone else in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as I was unlike anyone else in the room, my anxiety was spiking. My level of discomfort was incredible. But when I could identify with people, then the anxiety dissipated. My comfort level grew. And I could actually take a deep breath and feel good.
Mm-hmm.
But it took me a lot of meetings to begin to see and understand and make those connections.
Sure. So it wasn't something that happened overnight?
No, no. And so at Princeton House, I just try to let them know, look, as unique and as special as you think your situation is, I identify.
Mm-hmm.
And the good news, quite frequently, the first responders we get have been to a behavioral hospital setting previously.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have enjoyed periods of progress and recovery. And so I like to point out that they have already had a taste of success and they know it's possible for them. Mm-hmm. And now we just want to build on that positive experience. Let us know what works so we can reinforce and do more of those kinds of things that help you and do less of the things you find useless.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go with what works.
Yeah, so really getting their buy-in in terms of what they know works for them and what doesn't work for them.
Exactly.
I had a thought, and I want to run this by you and see what you think. You know, you talked about connection and how that was integral to your own recovery process. And I think, you know, anyone you talk to who's in long-term recovery would agree with you that connection is really the antidote to addiction. Now, I'm wondering with first responders, if there could be an extra layer of challenge when it comes to this connection piece, because my experience has been that oftentimes what will happen is, you know, cops will go out to get drinks after work, or, you know, they'll blow off steam that way, or people in the military. Now, if you're someone who's in recovery or trying to be in recovery, it can seem like you're going out and getting that connection and support, which is a good thing, but at the same time, you're kind of nursing that addiction piece. at least in the beginning. So I'm wondering, like, is there a challenge there in your mind when it comes to first responders? And if there is, how can they navigate that?
Your question touches on many very different variables. Mm-hmm. I know that in the Marine Corps, they build and breed a lot of dependence on my unit. You know that the man to the left of me and the man to the right of me, if they don't do their jobs, they put my life in peril.
Of course.
And so many people have strong ties to people from their units. Mm-hmm. And so even though I served, I wasn't in their unit. And so then a key question is, what is their level of pain? How open are they to change? And so many times, I mean, this past weekend, I had a conversation with a combat vet, and I said, let's look at the facts. You know, I can't make you do anything. You have to choose what you are willing to do. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to be honest with me, but you do have to be honest with yourself. And so then he began to talk about previous efforts at recovery and all the corners he cut and the fact that he was trying to please other people, that he didn't see recovery as his very life being at stake. Mm-hmm. And now that's more or less the point he's at. And that's why he's seeking long-term treatment. You know, and so recovery is a process. You don't go from being a recluse to being a social butterfly in 96 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a process.
Yeah. It takes time, and I would imagine that your perspective when you're new in your recovery is a lot different than when you're in long-term recovery.
Well, and the key is to keep it in today. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as I don't pick up, I'm a winner. Mm-hmm. And the more days I'm successful at, then hopefully the different tools I have to face life on life's terms, the number of tools grows, my skill and adeptness with those tools grow. But you're exactly right. It does take time. It does take repetition. And I have to be patient with myself. Mm-hmm.
Something I want to ask you is, if you could say anything to a first responder out there who's listening to this and is considering that maybe they are developing a problem with substances or with their mental health, but they're hesitant to go get help for that, what would you say to them?
I would ask them if they have had the ability to give themselves relief. And if they have felt relief, where did that relief come from? Mm-hmm. And I would sum up with, call the first responders at Princeton House, and not because you're interested in coming to Princeton House, mm-hmm. but just come for a tour and general information. Mm-hmm. You know, is the person open and willing to talk about a solution rather than remaining stuck in the problem? Mm-hmm. On many Saturdays at 3:15, I do a first step group on one of the wings. Mm-hmm. And I always like to tell this one joke because to me, it sums up step one. Mm-hmm. So just imagine, Andy, you're sitting there and out of the blue, you realize on your right side, there's a giraffe. And you know what a giraffe is. It's an animal with an incredibly long neck. It's brown, it's orange, I mean, it's an eyeful. And just as you're realizing you have a giraffe on your right side, you hear a growl on your left side and there's a tiger. And tigers are orange and black and they have big teeth because they eat humans. And so now you have a giraffe on the right and you have a tiger on the left. And so you throw a glance over your shoulder and you notice that there's a lion behind you. So you have a giraffe on the right, a tiger on the left, and a lion chasing you. What do you need to do, Andrew? What do you need to do? You need to get off the damn merry-go-round is what you need to do.
I think that about sums it up.
So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, listen, Dave, it's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for the work that you do.
Well, thank you, and thank you for this opportunity.
Of course, it was a pleasure.